This is the podcast for January 27th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from way outside Mitt Romney's income tax bracket, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Well, I don't know. We might actually be paying exactly the same rate as Mitt Romney this year. It's hard
That's true.
To say.
That's true.
That's and I want to start by saying I really liked what you had to say about the Herman Cain having a Tea Party response to
yeah.
the State of the Union. And you said, where's the yeah. liberal State of the Union response?
Yeah. Yeah. Where? Well, and here it is.
And that's what I said. I said, duh.
Yeah. Here we are.
Here we then, are. And I was disappointed in the speech, and I think a lot of liberals were.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking about Norm MacDonald. Remember Norm MacDonald on SportsCenter on Comedy
Central? I vaguely do.
Well, I watched it because it was right on before Tosh.
And I was cable-free at that time.
Well, that's
time,
true. So. You were not living down here. But no. he had this feature that was really popular called Wait, What? And he would just have, you know, monkeys riding miniature horses. And then he'd just come on and go, Wait, What? And I kept saying that during the speech. There was, especially the whole part about energy.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, we're going to do everything, including, you know, fracking is a good thing.
Yeah.
And he said, I have some quotes from the speech just so that I'm sure in my own mind I'm being fair to the president.
Uh-huh.
He said, by the way, it was public research dollars over the course of 30 years that helped develop the technologies to extract all this natural gas out of shale rock, reminding us that government support is critical in helping businesses get new energy ideas off the ground.
Yeah.
Wait, what? My tax dollars went to develop fracking?
Well, and just as a brief aside, I'm sure you know this, Blue Gal, but long ago, when Rahm Emanuel was not yet the chief of staff or mayor of the city of Chicago, but was an ally of Barack Obama and a congressman from Illinois, he and P. Boone Pickens made a stop at the at Navy Pier for a big energy conference where T. Boone Pickens was talking about the miracles of natural gas and how we're going to have these cars and they're going to run on natural gas and it's going to be awesome and we're going to get off this stuff. And T. Boone Pickens was the guy who spent a not inconsiderable amount of money trying to destroy Bill Clinton back when Rahm Emanuel worked for Bill Clinton. And they were not at all allies except on this one matter. And I actually went to this thing. I sat through it, and that's how far back the idea that we're going to get this natural gas stuff out of the ground by whatever means necessary to run our cars and houses, etc., was embedded in the centrist sort of third wave Clinton Democratic mindset.
Well, and now, just to get back to the president's speech, right before that, he said, I'm requiring all companies that drill for gas on public lands to disclose the chemicals they use.
Well, good.
Wait, what?
That's A.
A? There's so much wrong with that sentence.
Begin.
Companies drilling for gas on public lands, number one.
Yeah.
Wait, what? And now the president's boldly going to force them to disclose the chemicals they use. Not tell them they can't. Just tell us and then we'll sweep it under the rug. Is that the idea? It was just a whole, wait, what? What are you saying?
Well, and if you were observing this from orbit, my first question would be, they don't have to disclose what chemicals they're pumping into our groundwater now?
Right.
What?
No, it really is. It's that whole thing.
Yeah.
And it really shows you who's running energy policy in this. Speaking of all the podcasting that's going on, this is all way out of order here, but I listened to a couple of really good podcasts this week, and I wanted to mention them.
Okay.
One I've mentioned before is Liberal Oasis, and Bill Scherr on Liberal Oasis this week had a really good explanation of the different kinds of polls that go on in every election, but he was specifically talking about Republican primaries and the difference between a tracking poll and a regular poll and different kinds of polls and what they mean. And if you're interested in that sort of thing, he was really clear about how these things work.
Well, I am, because networks never explain what those poll numbers mean, or really very rarely do they ever mention who's represented. Is this likely voters, actual voters, dead people, just folks they grabbed on the street? And so I think that's terribly
people important. Who are lonely enough to answer their telephone when it said, you know, 800 service on the caller ID.
Now, ask me more questions.
Yeah, I'll talk to you. Sure. Yeah. And the other podcast that I listened to that was good is a new one that I hadn't listened to before called Bruno and the Professor. You can Google both of these and find them. Bruno and the Professor, this was their they call it their 500th episode. They skipped some numbers somewhere in there.
Basically.
But they've been podcasting a couple times a week for almost as long as we have.
Yeah.
And they had a really good discussion of SOPA and PIPA and the in terms of means of production. It was very interesting to talk about Hollywood means of production and distribution and why certain parties were supporting a SOPA solution to that based on how these products are made. And I found it fascinating, and these guys obviously know what they're talking about. So just wanted to give a hat tip to both of those. If you're looking for more podcasts to listen to this weekend, they're good.
And why wouldn't you be?
And why wouldn't you be? But getting back to
State of the Union.
State of the Union. You wrote a really long post on the day of the State of the Union.
I did.
That turned out it was like you were in his mind.
I'm in your head, man.
Oh, and I just wanted to say one more thing, and that is that as disappointed as I was in the president's speech, and I was sitting there going, oh, man, I'm going to have to podcast about this and how much I disliked it and all the problems I have with it. And then who should come on as the response but Mitch Daniels? And I was like,
okay,
wow, the premier union buster coming on and saying that America's going to over Niagara Falls unless we needs test Social Security.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I'm sitting there, you weren't home this week. You're home now, but you weren't home this week. And I'm looking at the TV by myself and going, wow, did David Plouffe pick this guy? Because if I needed somebody to make me feel better about the working with the president I have rather than the president I want, I hate to paraphrase the former defense secretary there, but, you know, if I needed somebody, the only person they could have picked was better would be Donald Trump.
I was going to say, apparently Alan Keyes was not available.
Was not available.
So they got Mitch Daniels. No, I'm sorry. Alan Keyes can't make it.
Could you pitch in?
Yeah. And Mitch Daniels, Mr. Charisma.
Yeah, oh, my God.
I did see him. All I could think of was Anchorman.
Yeah.
That movie Anchorman. Yeah. You know, he loves Lamp.
Mitch Daniels just does look like a model for the next Peter Jackson movie.
I wish. You know, we'll have to means test Social Security, Prish.
Or we'll fall off the cliff. But anyway, getting back to your post on manufacturing.
Yeah.
Because there was a long-ass post full of lots of detail.
Details and facts and shit.
Yeah.
And it took me a chunk of the morning to write it. And it was, as many of my posts are, not, I would say, a majority, but perhaps a plurality, was in response to one of my three nemeses in the mainstream media or in the conservative media or in people who just really shouldn't be where they are. I don't need to have their job, but somebody else needs to have their job. David Brooks really doesn't have any business writing for the New York Times. And Ross Duhat has no business writing for the New York Times. And Tom Friedman makes those two guys look like Hemingway. The follow-up post to my long post was, I don't find people like Ross Duhat interesting because of what he says, because what he says is just nonsense.
But the Democrats are equally bad. The Democratic writers for the New York Times. Wait, oh, never mind.
But I find his existence fascinating.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
That he and Tom Friedman, just the god-awful, crap-slinging Tom Friedman, and David Brooks all simultaneously exist on the op-ed page of the New York Times at this point in our history. It's as if the Mars rover had found a fiddler crab speaking Portuguese.
Yep.
It's such an anomaly. It makes no sense at all if you believe anything at all about our media that you're told, like it's a meritocracy, like the best people will rise to the top of it. The people with the most interesting ideas, the best writers, the most competent, the most anything, the most diligent, the most hardworking. When was the last time you heard David Brooks breaking a story? No, David Brooks rolls out of bed twice a week and jerks off 800 words in the New York Times, which are by and large exactly the same thing he wrote last week and the week before that, going back 5 or 6 years. That's his job. And as a rich white Republican who doesn't work for a living in any sense that you or I would understand, his obsession is, of course, inflicting the maximum amount of pain, Simpson Bowles beating poor people with chains pain on poor people, because that's how you fix the economy. You have to share the pain downward. Mm-hmm. You have to make those people fucking suffer. That's what that, because that builds character.
And by the way, people that are looking for ways to, we try to give people vocabulary on this podcast to deal with things. Yeah. And when you are confronted with someone who says, look, I don't care how much money Mitt Romney makes. He's rich. He deserves it. He, whatever, you know, he's in business for himself. Everybody deserves to have a chance. That's fine. Mitt Romney can have all the money he wants or can earn, but he and his party are advocating more tax cuts for themselves and demanding and demanding austerity from people who need Social Security and Medicare, either now or in the future. That's the problem.
After 30 straight years of tax cuts, with a minor increase during the Clinton years, you might remember those when 20 million jobs were created and we had surpluses, but a pretty much a straight downward trajectory of tax cuts for rich people. Now that we are broke and in debt and our jobs are being shipped overseas by the job lot, these same people say, you know what we need? One more tax cut. That'll do it. That'll fix everything. And you have to be a sadist or a moron to believe that.
One of
or
the
you
two.
Have to be a Republican.
So so when someone says, you know, as they say on Fox and Friends all the time, he's rich. Everybody knows he's rich. No big deal. You say it is no big deal unless he's requiring austerity from the rest of us.
Well, and that sort of brings us in a roundabout way back to manufacturing.
Yeah.
Because what I know a lot about manufacturing. I know a lot about the people who work in the field and their viewpoints and the economic drivers that make them possible. I've been following Barack Obama since he was candidate Obama. He's been talking about this stuff for 4 years or longer. So it is. So when David Brooks writes a column saying essentially that the president didn't take manufacturing seriously or just threw some things together or was not – just made some stuff up for the speech, I know that's a lie. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's so cool about the internet is I can go look up on the internet and see here's a speech he gave in Cincinnati. Here's the one he gave in Pittsburgh. Here's the one here was his appointment of Ron Blum as his manufacturing czar. Here is the entire right wing going completely bug fuck insane over appointing a manufacturing czar, calling him a Marxist.
Yep.
And it's such a clear trajectory of the president's people, his administration, trying to do even modest things in this field and being absolutely opposed at every step along the way.
Oh, and Michelle Bachmann was on right after the speech, too, talking about how green energy is socialism.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, you know. Oh, Greta, we can't have this socialism.
I don't blame her. I blame the morally and culturally retarded people who vote for her. I blame the really subhuman slugs who vote for her, who can't be troubled to bother to figure out what's true and what's false, who vote for people who appeal to their bigotries. But I wrote a very long rebuttal, which turned out to be a response to the State of the Union about the state of manufacturing. And I will tell you right now that the single wisest investment we could make in terms of jolting the economy is to radically improve the manufacturing sector, improve the training of people in the manufacturing sector.
Starting at a very young age.
But there's lots of things that need to be fixed in the sector. You need to fix grade schools, high schools. You need to fix the adult training programs. You need to go into community colleges and convince them they need to change their curriculum. You need to go into to small businesses, to the manufacturer. There are hundreds of thousands of manufacturing companies still in this country. They're not all gone. A big chunk of them are gone. But one of the delightful truths about manufacturing is that it's one of those industries that generates lots of induced jobs. Mm-hmm. There's a multiplier that everybody in the field knows, which is for every job you create in manufacturing, you create 3 to 5 jobs in the rest of the economy. People who have to drive supplies. Right.
People who have to stock parts. Yeah. For machines, that kind of thing, sure.
This is why letting the auto industry go would have been just suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mitt Romney knows that.
Yeah.
He knows that if you take down the 1 million manufacturing jobs in auto, you kill off 3 to 4 million jobs in the rest of the economy, because that's just how it works. All the people who do dry cleaning, all the people who run the restaurants in the towns, those people lose jobs because the manufacturing folks in their towns no longer have money. That's how it works. So manufacturing is the single largest job multiplier job in the middle class section of the United States. So even if it's a small sector, even if we're never going to get all those high school diploma jobs back from the 50s and 60s, which we're not, it's the single most vital driving engine in the economy because it produces so much wealth. Mm-hmm. And the jobs in the middle and top are so well paid relative to everything else. And you still don't need a 4-year degree or an 8-year degree to get them.
Right.
But you do need something. And so you have this sector where the technology has been getting more and more complex over the last 30 years. And our training programs have been getting poorer and poorer over the last 30 years. And we've crossed that line. And every manufacturer I've ever talked to in my life will trace the beginning of the end of their sector to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
To the 80s. Yeah. When we all decided as a country, hey, let's turn everything over to the financial sector.
Yeah, everyone's going to go to work for banks. Yeah.
We're going to go be bankers, or we're going to go be computer programmers. We certainly don't need to send our kids to factories anymore.
Yeah.
And everything about this field needs fixing, but it's all fixable.
Well, and it's sad because in part it tapped into people's desire for a more genteel life.
Sure.
And we don't want to work in a factory all our lives.
And it's
turning out that's actually decent work at a decent wage is what is genteel.
I can
genteel.
Take you to factories anywhere in the Chicago area that look like museums.
Yeah.
Not because they're empty or echoey, but because they're clean, they're quiet, they're well run, they produce an enormous amount, they produce vastly more than they did 10 years ago using far fewer people.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who work there are much better paid.
Highly skilled, too. Yeah.
And highly skilled. And it is a technology job in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But all of the things Barack Obama talked about, from fixing community colleges to moving people, because there's this pool of people on one side who desperately need work. And believe it or not, there's an actual job shortage in manufacturing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no way to
a shortage of trained
skills.
People to work in those jobs, yeah. We're going to have to do is actually elect a Republican president, and then he will use all of Barack Obama's ideas to get the manufacturing sector reworked.
No.
Is that what's going to happen?
No, because they are in the middle of a bust out. They're in the middle of breaking this sector down and selling it off for parts.
That's true.
And there's a real genuine philosophical argument to be had at the center of this that no one's ever going to have, that a couple of friends of mine used to have all the time, which was – one of them would assert that shutting a factory down in a neighborhood and selling it off for real estate so that you can go retire in Florida is your right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely your right. It's your property. You built it.
Yeah, if it's your company.
Owned machines.
Yep.
Fuck it. I don't care. It's my right to do that, which is true. But my other friend would say, no, that's economic violence.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely unnecessary. That was a going concern. And if you had simply reinvested in your people, bought some more equipment, and figured out what you're going to do after retirement.
Yeah, and who's going to succeed you as the owner of the property. Yeah.
That 60 or 70% of manufacturing companies in this country could have been saved just for those things. But the people who owned them said, screw it, I don't care. My kids are gone. I used the wealth I generated from this to send them to college, and now they're off as they're now lawyers.
Yeah.
So I don't need this factory anymore, so screw it, I'll let it rot. Mm-hmm. And that destroys the neighborhood. And that's an act of violence.
Yeah.
And there's a very vigorous argument to be had over property rights versus community rights mm-hmm. in that sense. But the problem is that we don't have a policy at a national level that induces people to do one or the other. It doesn't force them to do it. But the idea that the thing about manufacturing that people get always wrong is manufacturers never think of themselves as an economic sector. They think of themselves as rugged individualists who run their individual factories. So the idea that they are part of an economic thing is factually correct, and they go to the trade meetings and they know themselves that way. But the idea that they would ever sit still for a trade policy like they have in Germany, or the idea that they would ever let union members serve on their boards like they do in Germany, or the idea that they would ever sit still for some of the things that make Germany or Emilia-Romagna or other places in the world that are very prosperous manufacturers, the idea that this country would ever permit any of those things to happen under a Republican regime is ludicrous.
Yeah.
So we have to come up with our own American solutions to these problems. And Barack Obama outlined a bunch of those things, all of which are impossible to do with a Republican in the White House, and all of which are poo-pooed by people like David Brooks, who just can't imagine.
Well, it seems impossible to do with Republicans in the House of Representatives, too.
It is. So, and they're blocking everything. Yeah. They're blocking everything vigorously.
Can we transition a little bit to one thing that's very much related to this, which is
I was just going to say the first third of the speech I completely was down with. And if you'd like to read way more than you're ever going to want to know about the sector, come over to Jerk Lab.
Go over and read the blog. But related to all of this is where are people working today?
Yeah.
And Newt Gingrich and the food stamp thing.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is – there's a blog called Off the Charts Blog, which had an article this week, Five Things You Probably Don't Know About Food Stamps. And, of course, one of them is majority white. But the thing that did surprise me is a large and growing share of SNAP households are working households.
Yeah.
In 2010, more than three times as many food stamp households worked as relied on, so one-fourth of people on food stamps have no other income than food stamps or welfare. Mm-hmm. Three-fourths of the people on food stamps have a job.
Well, and you're absolutely right. This is directly related to manufacturing in the following way. This is what an America without a middle class is going to look like forever.
Yep.
If we don't rebuild the fucking middle class, if we don't have a prosperous, growing, strong, vibrant, well-educated, middle class that's bought into this country as a country, this is what America looks like. Peons working for peanuts, having to stretch the last 2 weeks of their month.
To buy macaroni and cheese. Yep, yep.
Forever.
Yep.
Forever.
Forever.
That's it. Everything is over from that point on. And you know who the biggest food stamp president was before Barack Obama?
George W. Bush.
George W. Bush. Because the economy, food stamps are counter-cyclical. When the economy tanks, people need to feed their families. That's all food stamps do. They feed your family.
And the money goes directly into the local economy in terms of grocery stores. And also, states are required, and there's a lot of federal checking on this, to check the incomes of the people. This is supposed to be an emergency, temporary thing.
Right.
And they check your income every 6 months. I've been on food stamps. You and I lost our food stamps this year. In 2011, because your unemployment put us over the income. Seriously, your unemployment check put us over when you started to get unemployed. When we got married, let me say that I was on food stamps as a single mom, and we got married in August, and you lost your job, and we had a month of food stamps. October, we had a month of food stamps, and then you got unemployment.
Yes.
And it was.
I prefer to think of it, you got your peanut butter in my chocolate.
Right. And we were disqualified. Yeah. And this is the way conservatives should want federal programs to work, which is they're for people that really need it. They should be temporary. And once your income goes over a certain limit, you don't get it anymore. And it's pretty quick how quickly you lose it compared to, you know, you're not – there is no lag really between when you go on unemployment or when you get more money coming in or you have an income – you lose your benefit pretty much immediately.
And this is what you, our readers, you, our listeners, have to understand about the Republican mindset for anything they do to make sense is they really believe, they have this really sadistic, monstrous, sort of abusive spouse, beat them harder belief that.
And we're talking specifically about Newt Gingrich here, people.
Newt Gingrich at the harsh and David Brooks at the genteel.
Yeah, yeah.
But they all believe the same fucking thing, which is the problem with people who are living marginal existences is that their lives aren't hard enough.
Right.
That if we just kick them a little bit harder. They're lazy. If you just kick them a little bit harder, just stomp their fingernails as they're clinging to the edge of the cliff, they'll sprout wings and become entrepreneurs, or they'll die. But either way, they'll stop being my problem.
And this article on Off the Charts blog said the one sentence I want to make sure gets on the podcast is, one reason why SNAP or food stamps is serving more working families is that for a growing share of the nation's worker, having a job, and they don't say having two jobs or three jobs, is not enough to keep people out of poverty.
Yep.
And that's the problem. And that's related to manufacturing. That's related to sectors. That's related to everything we've been talking about.
Well, and you draw straight through minimum wage.
Right.
Go look at every debate for the last 70 years or 60 years on minimum wage. Every single time, Republicans have made exactly the same fucking argument that's never been true, which is, well, if you raise the minimum wage 4 cents, you're going to destroy American businesses.
Yeah.
And by the way, people shouldn't be living on these wages anyway. These are just introductory wages. These are just high school, college, after school job wages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And they aren't anymore. Absolutely.
No. But the argument is always the same. It's always people should be aspiring to get out of whatever horrible place they're in, and they should be devoting their time and energy to doing that. And if they're not doing that, to my satisfaction, the solution is make it harder for them, make it so insufferably painful.
Well, and they forget, and they aren't aware, because to Mitt Romney, $374,000 isn't a lot.
That's it's walking
around money. You and I talked about that this week because I had to go to the Medicaid office this week and sit in the waiting room, which is. Yeah. The second most depressing place I've ever sat. I've been in infertility waiting rooms. That's pretty depressing. And I've been more depressing than even those two places is the fuel assistance place where I've had to go. And that's people who have no executive function. Their power's been turned off, and they just are not functional in a real way. You know, I wonder how some of them get to the grocery store and buy food. I don't know how they function day to day. But
being poor is hard.
But that's what I wanted to say, is sitting in that waiting room, just making sure that my kids have health insurance, you realize how paralyzing poverty is.
Uh-huh.
And watching some of these Occupy videos that they've had where people have nothing left but a car that they haven't made a payment on in 7 months, and you wonder, how did they get to the point where the water's turned off? And they're being evicted.
Yep.
And they're bringing bottled water in just to rinse off you have a hot plate, you know, propane stove to cook macaroni and cheese, as the people in Gainesville, Florida had. How did they get down to that point? And
one
it's
step
the
at a time.
Paralyzing
it is. It is.
Feature of poverty. You just don't know what to do next. And so I have a lot of sympathy for people who opt out of the electoral process or opt out of making any decisions regarding anything except I have to survive to the end of today.
Right.
You know,
everything else is a luxury.
Yeah. And they don't go out and march or throw bombs or do anything to make their lives better in a political way. They don't scream at Newt Gingrich for his bullshit attitude, because they are silenced by poverty. And we have to, all of us, those of you who are listening to us, the two of us, need to be the voice for those people.
Well, and people paralyzed by poverty who are scraping by day to day, who have no energy left to carry a sign.
Or help with homework. Help with homework with their kids.
People have no time left to follow the issues. People who just, at the end of an exhausting, beaten down, misery-laden day, just want to turn it off and watch fucking American Idol.
Yeah.
Those people opt out of the process for reasons I can completely understand.
Yeah.
And believe me, the Republican plan is to make 99% of us that person.
Yep.
So so desperate, so poor.
That's how they win. Yeah.
Pitted against each other, yep. Because I envy the person who shares the boxcar with me because they have a better suit
blanket,
of clothes,
yep.
And a better blanket than I do.
Blanket
and
I
the
do.
Idea that I would envy Mitt Romney is completely beyond my imagination because one day I'm going to win the lottery and yeah. I'm going to be Mitt Romney. That's why I don't want to pay taxes.
Right.
The idea that the plan – this is not an accident. Go read Republican literature from the 60s, 70s, 80s. The idea that the middle class is a bad thing and that we need to get rid of it. Go read Irving Kristol.
Yeah.
Go read
the plutocracy is the best way to govern. Yeah.
That a stable plutocracy is superior to every other form of government and just happens to favor me because I'm rich and I have an ideology called libertarianism or Randitism or objectivism or logical positivism or whatever the fuck they're calling it this week. So it happens to say rich people should run things because they are superior either genetically or by God or whatever. That ideology is the plan.
Hey, Driftglass, can we find a name for that ideology that would be quasi-Jewish commie like Saul Alinsky?
Alinskyism?
And paste it on there.
Sure.
That dog whistle is just to me. Wow, Jew commie. You know, you went there, Newt. Good for you.
Yeah.
And let's talk for a minute about how the country club right wing is losing its mind over Newt Gingrich.
Let me just finish off by saying that poverty is the plan.
Yeah.
And stultifying, overwhelming, terrifying poverty is their plan. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So if you are stuck in that place – I have absolute sympathy for you, and I totally understand why you opt out of the process. If you're not stuck there, if you're slightly above that, I mean, you and I are broke, we po, but we do pay attention to our surroundings, and we have more gifts and tools than most people I know. We're just having a bad stretch right now.
Yeah.
If that's you, then you've got no business checking out of the process, because those people who cannot fight for themselves need you. And if you turn your back on them because both parties are equally bad, Barack Obama is a center. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Not interested in your whining, because those people, your fellow citizens who are getting fucked in the ass because they have no power, need you.
Yep.
And if you can't man up and sack up and get in this fight, then go do something else with your life that's good or noble, et cetera. That's fine. But if all you do is sit on the sidelines and bitch, go someplace else. I don't have time for you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
let's talk about the Wall Street Journal just telling us all that the Republicans deserve to lose.
Let's look at this through the lens of Marxism, shall we?
Oh, my gosh.
Remember?
Well, I love what you said this morning when we had pancakes and you said that the debaters are going through the talking cure.
Yeah, yeah.
If you just have them on enough debates, eventually they'll tell you what they're really thinking.
Yeah. Eventually it'll all come out. And it does.
It does. Ron Paul said, look, nobody was sick in the 40s. They just invented this problem so we could have Medicare. Really?
And eventually they will. They're just keep them talking long enough and their crazy will come out.
Yeah.
Except, of course, in this case, the therapist is saying, yeah. Whatever sick, dark fantasies you have, those are good. Go with those.
Make yours. Let's applaud that. Yes.
Yeah. No, the Marxist analysis of why the country club Republicans are furious with Newt Gingrich and terrified of him is they're fighting over who controls the means of production.
Yeah, yeah.
They're having a genuine old-fashioned Marxist argument over who owns the machine. Mm-hmm. Did we talk
about this last week, or did I just talk with you about it over the phone? I can't remember now.
I did a post about it.
We have so many conversations. I don't even know when we've recorded them.
I know. Well, I'll just skip right over it to say that if we talked about this last week, I apologize for repeating myself.
I don't think so. I don't remember.
I'm wiped out.
Yes, it's Friday morning. We're both a little bit fried. Anyway.
But yes, the Wall Street Journal is A, angry at Newt Gingrich, and be angry at everybody else.
Yeah.
Why haven't you good people jumped in this race?
Well, can we read the the paragraph from the Wall Street Journal editorial, which I think is hilarious?
Yeah, go ahead.
There are the men not in the field. Mitch Daniels, Paul Ryan, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, Haley Barbour. This was the GOP A-team.
Now pause for a moment. Consider the person writing this didn't stop at the end of the sentence to go, wait a minute.
Wait, what?
What? What? The guys. No, please continue.
This was the GOP A-team, the guys who should have showed up to the first debate, but didn't, because running for president is hard, and the spouses were reluctant. Nothing commends them for it. If this election is as important as they all say it is, they had a duty to step up. Abraham Lincoln did not shy from the contest of 1860 because of Mary Todd. If Mr. Obama wins in November, or rather when he does, the failure will lie as heavily on their shoulders as it will with the nominee. And as I said on Twitter, shorter Wall Street Journal, the current GOP A-team is more pussy-whipped than Abraham Lincoln.
And their wives are crazier than Mary Todd.
Oh, so, man.
Hey, way to go. First of all, I would like to put this in a time capsule.
Yeah.
And send it back in time 7 years and read this to all those Sherborne, 101st, Chicken Hawk, sons of bitches who are completely gung-ho for Iraq because we were going to win. We're going to
Well, and Jonah Goldberg lost his mind this week, too, speaking of those kind of people. Yeah.
But they ain't going.
Nope.
Bill Kristol ain't going.
Nope.
Dick Cheney ain't going. Nobody in the Bush family is going. I'd like to send this, you know, what you needed to get on board with the process here, people. You opted out. You dodged. This was your responsibility, and you didn't step up.
You know
what?
Yep.
I would like all those college Republicans who, well, I'm going to go be a marketing major, and I'm going to serve my country by basically being a rich fuck in this country. I'll let poor people
fight my war for me, and I'll be an invest in war stocks. That'll be my job. Yeah.
That was the Republican. That was the doughy pantlow Jonah Goldberg party line back when it involved actual blood and actual risk.
Yeah.
Now they're just running for office. Now they're all indignant that these talentless losers or these people who would never survive in the first round of a primary didn't jump into the race. Well, good. You know why they didn't jump into the race? Because your party's crazy. That's why.
And they have no reason to risk their careers.
They know. They understand that your party is crazy.
Yeah, and that it will lose. And that it will lose because the Tea Party has pushed its party to the brink.
Well, and they know what they would have to do. What they'd have, they would have any one of these people in this race. This is where the entire Republican brain cast, starting with David Brooks, is just stoned.
Yeah.
They're just on because they never leave their little gated mental community bubble. They never actually get out in the world and see people as they really are. Yeah, they go to these campaigns, they talk to people out there, and they take notes and so forth. But they never actually experience the America you and I do. They apparently never watch Fox News, or as they've been doing for 30 years, they've just been pretending that those people over there are a crazy fringe minority. They're not really the Republican Party or the Republican Party. Bullshit. Here's the problem. Liberals have been right all along. Your party is crazy. You just kept them in the basement all this time. Yep. And as one of our readers said or listeners said, you kept them up in the attic.
Yeah, and made them wear shoes in public. And that was it. Yeah.
But they've always been there. This has always been your party. And we've always told you this, and you've always told us we didn't know what the fuck we were talking about. Well, now they're out in the open, baby. Now they're running amok through the landscape. Now they have busted out of the laboratory, and they're rampaging through the countryside. And you want to pretend they didn't exist. Fine. There they are. If you want to be president under the Republican banner, you have to be either Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney. You have to either believe the crazy shit you say or pretend you believe the crazy shit you say. And so whether it's Mitch Daniels or Paul Ryan or Chris Christie or whoever the fuck else you pull out of the rabbit's hat and put into the primary race, they're all John Huntsman.
Yeah, yeah.
They would stand up, be reasonable, and they would be wiped out in the first round.
Yep.
So to win in your party, you don't seem to understand the problem with the Republican Party is Republicans. You built them to be this way. Newt Gingrich is simply operating the system that he built in the way that he built it with a great deal of mastery. And Mitt Romney is trying to operate it with a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's trying to put a lot of dough around it and make it do what he wants it to do. But the Republican Party is behaving exactly as you designed it to behave. It's not listening to facts. It's not listening to reason. It is listening to Fox News. It's hating all the people that Rush Limbaugh tells them to hate. And they're changing their mind every few days based on what Fox News tells them to believe. Great. That's what you built. That's the party you made. So live with it. And the idea, but again, nobody is ever going to get to the Wall Street Journal editorial board or to David Brooks or to Ross Douhat or to David Frum and be able to grab them by the hair and rub their nose in it. They don't have to live with the consequences of the disaster that they created. We do. So sorry, editorial board.
Yeah.
Your GOP is behaving exactly the way it's supposed to behave. And you don't like it? Well, that's your own goddamn fault, isn't it?
Well, and just to close with something funny about Gingrich,
yes.
This is breaking news.
I
have breaking news. Newt got a letter from Randy Duke Cunningham. I'm reading this off of TPM Muckraker. Currently serving a 100-month sentence in federal prison after being convicted of bribery in one of the largest congressional corruption cases in recent memory.
Uh-huh.
And here's what he wrote from prison to Newt. He's decided to endorse Newt Gingrich from prison.
Oh, wow.
But I know my endorsement will do no more harm than good. Newt, a voice out of the past, down but not out and still fighting. First, I do not want anything from you, but have been watching the debates. I have 80% of inmates that would vote for you.
This is chapter 7 of Randy Duke Cunningham's book, My Struggle.
They might not be able to, but their extended families will. When you are president, I could help you with prison and justice reform if wanted.
God. Oh. 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 Are you sure this isn't a hoax?
No, it's not a hoax.
Oh. Oh.
Not a hoax.
So far it's no pimps and
yeah. Pimps
and their hoes
and
are libertarian.
It's they're, pimps, they're, Vegas sugar daddies,
yeah.
And felons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to end on that note.
Yeah. Wow.
TPM Muckraker, and hat tip to Jamie at Crooks and Liars for letting me know about that.
I hate to say this, but this is the stand. This is the stand. You know, we're all the misfits that survived the apocalypse. All the mutants and the freaks and the morons and the prisoners all slouch onto what's left of Las Vegas.
Wow.
To serve Satan in the final days. It's the apocalyptic battle at the end of the world, which is about half
so bad.
But it really is just, you know, they're gathering all the scum and mutants and morons into one party for, you know, I assume somebody out there is selling motel space at the plains of Megiddo because, you know, it's shaping up to be one hell of an election year,
yep.
I gotta say.
Yep, yep.
And if the debates have proven one thing, other than if you let a Republican talk long enough, eventually every horrible thing is going to come burbling out of their mouth. It's that we're really dividing this country up now.
Yeah. Yeah.
This election, almost more than any others, which side are you on?
Yep.
Because as bad as you might think Barack Obama is, and as many different ways as I completely disagree with many of his policies and many of his decisions, the starkness of the contrast between a party of weak people who disappoint and are half sold out to corporate interests and will let you down every now and then and let Joe Lieberman back in the door and God, how could they do that? And monsters, I mean, real live slouching horror show freaks on the other. If you're standing in the middle going, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe if Ralph Nader, I'm thinking, I don't know. Really, that's what I'm looking forward to this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this absolutely stark contrast between these two points of view and a decision that people are going to have to make in the polling place in November. Which side do you want?
Yeah. And what do you think is cool? Do you think this is cool? Because it ain't cool.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to thank our listeners and particularly thank everyone who has sent pictures of their internet kitties, internet puppies, internet babies with jammies with kitties on them, and so on and so forth. We have been inundated with internet kitty pictures, and we love them. You have such beautiful pets and beautiful children, and it's just wonderful to hear from all of you. This week, we had Lumpy. Quite a relaxed cat was sent in. He was the first one sent in, Lumpy. I don't think Lumpy's a girl. And so Lumpy was Internet Kitty of the Week this week. next week, or this coming week, Florence, who is the niece of one of our listeners in England, Andy's niece in England, and she is wearing Internet Kitty pajamas and sunglasses, and she's adorable. And so we're putting up Florence in her Internet Kitty pajamas this week, and that will be the Internet Kitty of the week. But it really, it's as I said to everyone who sent one in, it's like Dave Letterman says, this is an exhibition, not a competition. So we'll take them all. We'll take them all.
No, but no wagering.
No wagering. We just love getting these pictures, and they're going up week by week in the order that they are received. That's the easiest way to do it. Mm-hmm. We have a Profession Left app on the iPhones. And you can get yours at the iTunes store under Professional Left. It has the podcast, bonus podcast content from time to time, both our blogs and our Twitter streams. And if you purchase that and use it, we would appreciate it if you would rate that app. We have a website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen to our podcast for free with no download and no registration. And that is where the Internet Kitty of the Week will appear. We are on Facebook, and there's a Facebook link on our website. If you'd like us on Facebook, you can also friend me. I am Frances Langum, L-A-N-G-U-M, on Facebook. And you can friend me, and I'll friend you back. We're on iTunes, and we are also on Netroots Radio on Sunday nights. And we are also on Sketcher Radio, which is an app and a program that is used on smartphones, not just the Apple products, but all smartphones can use Sketcher Radio, and we're available there too. You can contribute to the podcast several ways. We have several buttons on our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. We also have a P.O. box where we love getting letters from you. Snail mail works for us, and that is P.O. box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We have an email address that goes to both of us. It's proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We got an email this week from Steve, and he lives in the desert southwest. That's all I'm going to say.
You want me to read it, Blue?
Sure. Why don't you read that to us?
Steve says, since moving down here to the heart of the western version of Wingnut Crazy Land, your podcast has been a lifeline. There has been a lot of craziness directed towards Obama, but it was the crazy blonde lady shaking her finger at our president that pushed me over the edge. Aren't these the people who kept telling me I had to respect the office up until 2008? I've shot a few bucks your way in the past, but I'm ponying up for a full subscription. Hope it helps you get the word out. Keep up the good work, Steve.
Oh, thank you, Steve. And what Steve did is donate $5 a month to us, which is one of the buttons that's available on our website. You can do $5 a month, $10 a month, or a one-time contribution. And a particular shout-out to those of you who download the podcast within the first 45 minutes when it goes up on Friday afternoon. We see the numbers. If you if you're somebody who downloads the podcast before 2 in the afternoon Eastern time, you need to pony up a one-time contribution of $5. We're going to ask you to do that. If you're unemployed or broke, you're exempted. But otherwise, come on.
I got to say, it put a smile on our face.
It does. It does. To see 161 downloads in 35 minutes. Yeah. Like you've been waiting all day for this.
What? And I believe me, to take myself out of the picture, I kind of understand that.
Oh, yeah.
It's something you can download, you can listen to. It doesn't require that you look at pictures. You can do whatever you're doing while you're listening. I love audiobooks. I love books, but I love audiobooks on a long trip or when I'm doing something else. So I totally get that, but it's weird that it's happening to us now.
Yeah.
We're getting that big an initial hit, literally in the first 30 minutes or 40 minutes after a podcast drops.
It's
stunning.
And we're grateful to you.
Rewarding.
We're grateful to you for your dedication. And just I want to remind people again that if you give a one-time contribution to us, if you give $15 or more, we send you a notepad that has Professional Left Podcast on it. Mm-hmm. If you send less than that, we always email back and thank you. But other than that, your name doesn't go on a list. We don't have a privacy policy because we don't need one. We don't keep a database. We don't do anything like that. We don't try to contact you again or hit you up for more money. We're just not because I hate that myself, and I want to be obedient to the golden rule on that regard. So, you know, just one-time contributions are just really appreciated, and the end. So thank you very much.
I do want to give a little preview. I'm, as you know, emptied out my place in Chicago and putting it on the market probably the end of this month or early next month. After many trips, iterations, paint jobs, one of the advantages of cleaning out your place is I found a little trinket from 1999 from a young congressional candidate named Barack Obama thanking me for his generous support, my generous support to his congressional campaign. And at the bottom of the page, it's Obama for Congress, not Obama for Senate, wow. Obama for Congress 2000. And he notes at the very bottom that the names and mailing addresses of everybody will have to, of course, be disclosed, and that corporate contributions are prohibited by law.
Wow.
So
times have changed.
I know. So I will be – that's how long I've been an OBOT there, Blue Gal.
Wow.
And I shall be posting that on my blog later today. And I'm sure by this evening or tomorrow, Glenn Greenwald will be, you know
– calling you an OBOT again.
Ripping me a new one. For not realizing what a monstrous fascist he was back in 1999. Yeah. Well, you know.
We love you, Glenn.
We love you, Glenn.
We do. No, really.
Glenn performs a valuable service.
He does, absolutely. He is on our team. You know, we just have minor disagreements from time to time. It's not this is not a war. This is not a war. This is a family argument around the table and a friendly one. So
what we do, he takes out a large sword and sticks it in our
and twists the knife
and calls us the most egregious name. But you know, what you gonna do? It's life in America or in Rio, I guess, if you're Glenn Greenwald. Anyway, Blue Gal, how the hell are those internet cities doing?
What? Wait, what?
What? Wait, what? Okay. Let me pretend that this is a spontaneous question. Hey, Blue Gal, how are those internet kitties doing this week?
The internet kitties woke up this morning actually missing Michelle Bachmann.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.